So welcome, everybody, and we're very excited to have both Dr. Banerjee's on the call today. Let me give them a quick introduction. So Dr. Prateep Banerjee has been a homeopath, and since 1991 is a medical doctor who has worked as a consulting physician in India. He received his bachelor's degree from Calcutta University, finishing second in his class with honors in both pathology and materia medica. He then completed a postgraduate degree from the London College of Classical Homeopathy with a diploma in teacher's training and the designation of PG.LCCH. Prateep also received his Doctor of Medicine from the JRN Rajasthan Vidyapeeth in Udaipur, India. Hopefully I'm pronouncing all that correctly. And Dr. Banerjee is the co-founder and deputy managing trustee of the Prasanta Banerjee Homeopathic Research Foundation. That's PBHRF, that's the acronym, and that's found in India. And through an arduous process of data accrual and documentation, Prateep has introduced scientific research in homeopathy, utilizing the highest international standards to demonstrate the verifiability of his research data. His vision into the future of the Banerjee Protocols, BP, of treatment utilizing homeopathic medicines has created research collaborations with international scientific establishments in addition to his research and consulting practice. Dr. Banerjee also runs a charitable clinic which services 300 to 400 patients a day. And we also have on the line his father, Prasanta Banerjee. By the way, these are fourth generation homeopaths, so there's a long history of homeopathy in their family. Prasanta Banerjee is a consulting physician educated at the Mihajim Institute of Homeopathic Medical College and Hospital, where he received his institute fellowship in 1956. He runs a clinic with an average daily attendance of 1,000 to 1,200 patients. Wow. Prasanta has been an honorary advisor to the Minister of Health and Family Welfare, and he also was a member of the Program Advisory Committee, PAC, for the National Cancer Control Program of the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare for the Government of India. He is the founder and managing trustee of the PBH Research Foundation, and Prasanta has created the Banerjee Protocols of treatment utilizing homeopathic medicines. Due to his diligent efforts, the modern scientific establishment has recognized and accepted the Banerjee Protocols of treatment into mainstream healthcare. The aim of the PBHRF is to establish the Banerjee Protocols as a scientific and effective approach to medicine. With the large volume of patients attending its two clinics daily, all kinds of diseases ranging from the common cold to serious life-threatening conditions are treated there. So we're very excited to have both of these gentlemen on. A long history of homeopathy in their family, doing tremendous work really to advance homeopathy in the eyes of the scientific community and to really bring real research and data accrual to the great art and science that we call homeopathic medicine. If you want more information, their websites, Prasanta Banerjee's website is www.PBHRFIN, so PBHRFINDIA.org. And the website for Prateep Banerjee is www. I did also want to mention that the Banerjees will be coming to North America. You can see them in person. The father and son duo will be speaking at the Canadian Homeopathic Conference in Toronto, as well as the Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and then ultimately they'll be presenting a full-day seminar in Buffalo in New York on October 29th. And there is a special deal. Arup, are you still on?
Yes, Kim.
Did you want to mention that special deal for those people who are interested in coming to Buffalo for the October 29th event?
Sure. In Western New York, we have started building a homeopathic resurgence, and we are inviting outside speaker. And Dr. Banerjee are the ones who are invited to speak on October 29th. So I invite everybody who is on call today and take 10% discount. All you need to do is, in the form, use the code Homeopathy Heals, H-O-M-E-O-P-A-T-H-Y, Homeopathy Heals, H-E-A-L-S. And then you get a 10% discount. The registration fee is $85 if you enroll, I believe, by September 30th. So you get, $8.50 less. And if you enroll after that, it's $105, so 10% off that. This includes the cost of lunch, which we thought of providing so that we can save as much time as we can for the seminar. And it'll be very exciting. So I invite everybody else. And they are also, by the way, speaking at, as Kim mentioned, in Toronto, also in another place in Toronto on 30th, which is a Sunday, that is at HMCC, Homeopathic Medical Council of Canada. So there's a lot of opportunities. I do invite everybody. Come and visit us, see the fall colors, and also Niagara Falls if you have not visited here. So everybody is welcome. Feel free to contact us if you have any further inquiries on anything.
Okay, and this really is an opportunity to have, homeopaths of this caliber coming to North America, the opportunity to participate in a conference of this quality is really a unique lifetime event. So, again, either Buffalo or the Toronto area are opportunities. If you didn't get all this information down, you can visit the Whole Health Now website, and their events are listed there, so you can see all the contact information and websites where you can get more info. Okay, fantastic. Well, welcome again. It's a pleasure to have you both on the call today. I thought I would start, today there's just a lot of challenges, a lot of media attacks, especially in the United Kingdom, but also in other parts of the world, against homeopathy. We, as longstanding practitioners, we know that homeopathy is effective. We also know that, from the history of homeopathy, that it's been very effective in the treatment of epidemic diseases. But the world, to a certain extent, is not aware of this. So I thought I would start by asking you what you feel are the advantages of homeopathy in today's world. What can it bring to the world community?
Yes, actually, Kim. See, homeopathy is a complete science. Homeopathy is a method of treatment with a philosophy that is really not the normal, the usual treatment available to the masses. The thing about homeopathy that gives it a definite advantage over the conventional medicine is that homeopathy is extremely effective and results can be as rapid, complete, and permanent. Homeopathy is completely safe. Even babies and expecting ladies can use them with impunity and without any dangerous side effects. Homeopathic remedies can be taken alongside any other type of treatment form. As we have, the way we practice, we see that homeopathy, these medicines will work in its own sphere, in spite of any interference from any other aspect of treatment that is going on with the patient. Homeopathy is natural. These remedies are based on natural ingredients. It works in harmony with your immune system, unlike some conventional medicines that suppress the immune system. And the best of all is that these medicines are not addictive, and once relief is felt, you can stop taking them. See, the ultimate aim of all treatment is to stop it. And homeopathy, when you treat in a holistic way, treats all the symptoms as one, which in practical terms means it addresses the cause, not only the symptoms. So, there being so many advantages to homeopathy, the most important advantage for us in developing countries is that it is economical as well. So I think that just homeopathy can't be beaten,
Yes, I would agree. Gentlemen, Dr. Banerjee, You know, there's in the community, in the world community today, people sometimes will say, okay, well, homeopathy can treat, you know, it might be able to treat colds or flus, and but, you know, it's only effective in certain types of conditions or certain types of ailments. I'm curious, which ailments do you feel homeopathy is particularly beneficial in treating?
See, homeopathy, as I said just now, is a complete science. You know, we, in our clinics, even because we have the huge volume of patients that we get everything from common cold to the worst type of cancers. In fact, on an average day, we get about 150 to 200 cases of cancer, which very few institutes anywhere in the world get. And we see that homeopathy is equally effective in diseases which require antibiotics, where we work without antibiotics. It works in viral infections without having to resort to any sort of antivirals conventionally given. Homeopathy can also work in many diseases which are considered to be surgical. You know, we routinely cure tonsillitis, appendicitis, without the use of any surgery. And what about the other diseases, like the hemorrhoids or the anal fissures or the fistulas? We treat them without any recourse to surgery. So if you consider that homeopathy is good for common cold or what, of course it is good for common cold, but at the same time it is also good for the whole human being, and it can treat any disease in the human being.
Dr. Banerjee, do you find that there are certain conditions that do not respond as well to homeopathic treatment, or are there certain ailments that you have found difficult or maybe even impossible to treat with homeopathy?
See, sometimes we see cases where we are running against a clock. For example, supposing there's a patient who's gone into a shock, and we need to immediately elevate the blood pressure, or we need to immediately administer some oxygen or whatever. All these we consider as management of the patient. So the management aspect of it, we would be happy to take the help of conventional medicine, who have perfected it for the last 5,000 years. But treatment-wise, in some cases where there's acute hemorrhaging, or if there's, you know, some medical emergency, at that point of time, it may be required that the patient is managed immediately with some life-saving drug. And we routinely get these cases where we interact closely with the conventional practitioners in treating cases who are really moribund, or have been hospitalized, or are in their care, or who have been in their care for very long. So in those cases, we don't even want to stop the medicines that are already being prescribed to the patient. We start off our medicines, and we try to wean the patient off those medicines that are already being administered. So there are some, like, you know, Hahnemann gave the example that if there's a fracture in the bone, then it's the job of the bone setter, right?
Dr. Banerjee, did we lose you?
No, I'm still here. I just...
Hey, all right.
I thought that I was talking too much, so you may need to say
okay.
Something.
Okay, no, very, very good. Listen, what I'd like to actually ask you a little bit about is specifically the Banerjee protocols, because this is something that you and your father are very famous for. I know you're going to be coming to North America and presenting specifically on the Banerjee protocols. I know many of our listeners are interested into what this is all about. So could you tell us a little bit about what exactly are the Banerjee protocols, and also how they're different from the more traditional way of practice homeopathy, the more Hahnemannian approach? Could you go into that for us a little bit?
As you mentioned very kindly while introducing us, I am the fourth generation homeopath, yes. And you know, homeopathy has been in our family for almost 150 years now. And from this, we have been privileged You know, each of our generations have been privileged with a massive influx of patients. My grandfather, Dr. Parishnath Banerjee, used to see in his clinic 2,000 to 3,000 patients with the help of a whole team of doctors. So the figure is halved in our clinic to 1,200 or 1,500, you know. So, but from this, what we have developed is specific medicines for specific disease diagnosis. We don't treat the patient as a whole in every case. What we do basically is we have developed diagnostic medicines in, you know, the medicine is specific for a specific disease, in a specific potency, in a specific dosage pattern. For example, if one patient suffering from, say, tuberculosis visits our clinic, that patient, and we have about 10 assistant doctors who help us in our practice, the patient can go to any of the doctors, including my father or myself, and they will be given the same prescription. You know, what this has generated is, it has generated a sort of a replicability in practice. This is why we are attractive to institutions who are interested to research with homeopathic medicine. Because they can, you know, homeopathy needs to be accepted in conventional practitioners as well as by the public, you know. Because if the conventional practitioners do not accept homeopathy, then it becomes like a sort of a, then it sort of gathers a sort of mysticism, and it occupies a very small niche position. But homeopathy is actually not like that. We have families and we have a whole population of patients who never go for any treatment other than homeopathy, which they get from our clinic. So the Banerjee protocols basically are nothing but the prescription of specific medicines for specific diseases in the treatment of different patients suffering from the same disease, based on fixed potencies in preset dosage patterns, often in the form of, you know, varying frequency of doses, and the mixing and alteration of medicines also we do. We can put two medicines into one bottle and prescribe it to the patient. You know, many patent medicines are being done like that. But ours is a much more targeted thing and much more doable thing, much easier to learn, much easier to practice, and can help a vast more number of patients than is seen by a homeopath in their daily practice. So first, we must be able to treat the bottom line people. After that, we can specialize into, you know, I specialize in cancer, or I specialize in renal diseases. But on the baseline, the doctor who leaves the institution and is labeled as a homeopath must be able to address, without having to take recourse to complicated rituals, must be able to handle the baseline, you know, the patient who just pops into the clinic and says, "Doc, I have a cold, give me a medicine." So that is what the Banerjee protocols addresses. But also, at the same time, we have protocols for every disease imaginable. So what happens is that we treat the common cold with the Banerjee protocols, and we treat cancer with the Banerjee protocols. So even every type of cancer also has a set protocol. That is the uniqueness of this system. My father would like to say something.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
This Banerjee protocol has been, we have achieved this success because of the seeing similar type of patients in thousands. For the last 58 years of my practice, we have seen a lot of cases of the same nature, and then we have had an observation that what type of medicines are most beneficial for that particular type of diseases. With that, we have formulated this Banerjee protocol, and with the same dilution also.
Thank you.
So this way, all the diseases have been, we have been able to give relief to the patients in these protocols.
Okay, Kim.
Yes. So let me ask you a question. Do you do this? Do you use the Banerjee protocols in all of your cases, or is there a certain category or type of case where you'll use it? And do you ever use the more Hahnemannian approach to homeopathy?
No, we treat almost all the cases with this protocol, which you have seen during the last so many years. We have seen a lot of cases, and we have formulated treatment for almost all the diseases. In some cases where there is no specific disease, but there is some mental condition, some other problems, we do treat them Hahnemannian way of case taking and doing that. But this is very few.
Okay, great. So, you know, I'd like to ask you specifically about the treatment of cancer, because this is, in North America, for the most part, we're very cautious about treating cancer. We don't have the government type of support that you have in India, so people are very cautious. And also, at least my understanding here in North America is a lot of people who do venture out and do treat cancer are not getting the type of results that we oftentimes read about in the old literature. You know, when you read, for example, the writings of Arthur Grimmer and all of his claims of so many cured cases of cancer, you don't see that so much in the United States and Canada, and I think even in Europe. But when you go to India, you know, you hear really some amazing stories. So I'm curious, what is your experience treating cancer? Do you see it actually curing your patients, or is it more palliative? What can you tell us?
The thing is, in India, homeopathy is completely a mainstream treatment. It is a fully legalized treatment, and people have a choice whether they will go for conventional or to us. Majority of the people here now, at least for the last 20-25 years, they don't, even there is a cancer, they don't go for conventional at all. They come to us, we treat them, and we have a lot of experiences with that, and we can now confidently treat. And we have, you know, we have presented best case series with the U.S. government, and that has been accepted. Ours is the only thing, and the government, the NCI has certified the cures. So we have made a lot of observations, and really very good treatment for the cancer cases. We got the opportunity, people have given us that. And the thing is, in India also, there is a lot of, everybody is to spend for their own for the treatment. No insurance or no help from the government side for any treatment. So in the cases of heavy expenditure, people can't go for conventional at all. And that has given us a more advantage to treat these cases.
And are you're seeing outright cures, not just palliation of the cases?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
You're seeing actual cure, not just palliation of the symptoms.
No, actually, see, we are actually seeing things that never cease to amaze us.
Yeah.
We actually see cases where the cancer regresses, like leaving behind normal architecture. So, when we think about homeopathy, these medicines, these minute doses of these medicines, they have such amazing healing properties, and we actually see complete remissions. We actually see complete remissions, you know, which we will show in these conferences that all these seminars that we plan for in Canada and the U.S. And because of this, when we presented our best case series for the cancer advisory panel in 1999, they were actually very, very excited about this, and many such research areas had opened up for us, or have opened up for us even now. And we have done work on breast cancer with the MD Anderson Cancer Center, just recently published. And we have also, our protocols for those that brain tumor, the treatment of brain tumors by Ruta and Calcarea Foss. See, in what we do, Kim, there is no hide and seek. We do not protect these protocols and hold them like a family secret. We readily divulge to anybody interested to know. Routinely, right now, we are treating brain tumors in, not only brain tumors, different types of cancers in over 80 countries around the world through the internet, and not charging them. We don't charge for this service. And we don't hide the name of the medicine and say, okay, we'll send it to you. We just prescribe it and we tell them, see if you can get it. If you can't, then we try to look for a source close to them. From there, they can procure it.
Mm.
So the treatment for cancer by the Banerjee protocols using homeopathic medicines has seen lot of support from the patient community. You see, now patients, especially in the US, you know that the patient lobby is an extremely strong one, and these user support groups, what they have basically done is they go to the doctor and say, okay, this is the protocol, this is the Banerjee protocol for brain tumor, I want to use this. So what has happened with this is that many neuro-oncologists have got interested, and they have started actually interacting with us to find out what is it exactly that we do. And when they see that the medicine that we give is so ultra-dilute that it should not in any way interfere with whatever they are doing, they allow the patient to take it. So in this way, what is happening that amongst a certain section of the cancer community, by that I mean the patients and the clinicians, there is a lot of use, even in the US, in as I said, 80 countries around the world. In the US, we have a lot of support from the conventional cancer community, because we have many common patients with them who have shown some improvement, an improvement in quality of life, in some cases a regression, in a lot of cases at least a static condition. You know, all these things have helped us. And mainly the patients are the people whom we learn from. So our experience with these patients has been very, very inspiring.
Fantastic. Dr. Banerjee, there's different types of cancer. Do you find that some are more effectively or more responsive to homeopathic intervention? And if so, could you specify which ones you seem to get the best results with?
See, from our considerable experience with these cancers and the data that we have collected in our clinics, you know, for the last, previously we were not collecting data on these cases. But then since 1992, we have put in a database system where we capture on computer the cases who come to see. The original idea of mine had been that we would capture every case that visits our clinic. There is 1,000 cases a day. But that required such an immense infrastructure that we could only concentrate on the cancers and the other serious cases like renal failures or, you know, such. And what we have been able to do is now we have about 20,000 cancer cases recorded, different types of cancer, every imaginable type of cancer in every imaginable stage of the disease. See, 20,000 cases. And with almost 500,000 visits recorded. So what we have done so far is we have just recorded. Now the time has come, and we are getting offers from different institutions to come and actually verify the data and to mine it. And to, you know, this data is very important and makes us very attractive to the cancer research community, because they want to see how cases respond who are only under our treatment, how cases respond who are also taking chemotherapy and are also under our treatment, how these cases, you know, we treat every type and we don't choose and we don't refuse. Whoever comes to us, we treat them. And through this, all these cases, now we are going to start mining the results. See, previously we have done only brain tumors, we have mined the brain tumor data, we have mined the breast cancer data. But now what we are going to do is we are going to mine the whole data as a whole. And we have some very firm commitments and a lot of support from certain groups who are interested to help us to do this. So let's see, that will be the next logical step.
Mm. Dr. Banerjee, you mentioned Ruta, Gravilions, and also Calc Fos as two of the remedies that you use in brain tumors. And I imagine this is part of your Banerjee protocols. Could you give us a couple of other examples just so that people can get a sense of, you know, how you actually, you know, a couple of different disease conditions and maybe just which remedies you use and which potencies so people can get a sense of exactly how these protocols work?
Sure. See, for example, in breast cancer, we use Phytolecta carcinosin. So Phytolecta 200, two times a day, and carcinosin 30C, that is, one dose every alternate day. In cases where the response for this set of medicines is not so good, we may go to Thuja 30, or we may use conium 3, conium macrolidium. So that is what we used to say breast cancer. For cancer of the thyroid, then we would use bromium 6C if the thyroid is low functioning, along with the carcinosin. And if there's lymph node metastasis, then we would incorporate Thuja or hypersulfuse. In case of hyperthyroidism, where the cancer is making the thyroid produce a sort of a hyper state, that is excessive production of thyroxine, then we would use iodum 200C, also given twice a day. So, see, the basic thing, the basic medicine is fixed. Say, for example, in lung cancers, we use Kali Carbonicum 200C. That is to be given on alternate days. And along with that, we use Thuja 30C two times a day. And if there's hemoptysis, then after that, what happens is that the symptoms dictate the other medicine. Such as if there's hemoptysis, then we would give Ferrum Phosphoricum 3X. If there is pleural effusion, fluid in the lung, then we would use Lycopodium 30CH. And, you know, so different, if there's pain, then we would use Hypericum 200 and so forth. So the basic medicine for the Banerjee protocols is a fixed one. But alongside with that, what we do is we can use other medicines to give symptomatic relief in different symptoms, in different scenarios and in different states of the patient. For example, with Ruta and Calcarea Fos in brain tumors, if there's convulsions, then we would add Cuprometallicum 6, given two times a day. Or if there is fluid, if the edema in the brain is a lot, then we would add Lycopodium 30CH. So all these things, it's very easy to, it's very, you know, the way we do it, it is very easy to teach the students, you know, so that when they get out of the medical college, they are already running on their feet. We can start teaching them simple things like the day-to-day complaints that, or maybe a mother's kit, you know, something that a mother should keep at home. All these things are perfectly doable with homeopathy. And we want to disseminate the knowledge. We're not interested in holding it to ourselves. We want to let everybody know. Let everybody get the benefit of all the experience that we have been so privileged to have been able to acquire. Kim.
Very interesting. Dr. Banerjee, either one of you, you know, I know many people after listening to this will be interested in participating in your seminars in North America. You know, the idea of some simplified way of prescribing our remedies, I'm sure has a certain appeal to a certain segment of our community. But I'm also imagining there will be some people who simply will not be able to come to your events in Buffalo or Toronto either because of previous, you know, conflicts in their schedule, or it's just too far, or budgetary concerns. For those people, where could they get information about your protocols? How would they do that?
See, what we are trying to do, or what we are not trying to do, what we have done already, is we have started writing books on different protocols for different diseases. And the first book has been completed, and it has been sent to a very esteemed person in the cancer society for a forward. So that is where it is pending now. And in this way, what we hope to do is we hope to publish all the protocols and disseminate this to the homeopathic community. And by this, see, this gives the homeopath a choice. They can do classical homeopathy, but this book can be used like a ready reckoner, and it will be of tremendous help to the practitioner who suddenly needs one that certain pill for immediate relief of a condition, or has not yet studied the case enough to know what similimum should be given. And this ready reckoner can provide a medicine which may, you know, which may negate the need for a similimum. The patient might be cured without it. So this is what we hope to do. And so the information will be readily available for anyone and everyone in these books that are on the table right now.
Okay, fantastic. I'd like to just move on to a different topic, which is the whole issue of clinical research. You know, there are certainly people within our community who do not feel that research is all that important. There are certain individuals, myself being among those, who feel that the research is rather very important, and that we actually do need to, as you're doing, collect information on large amounts of data and carefully document what we're doing. I'd like to hear your ideas about clinical research in general, and maybe you could also tell us a little bit about your collaborations in this area, both past and present.
See, actually, the collaborations started when we were invited to present to present a paper in a conventional conference where there were about 1,200 attendees, all conventional, the MDs and the PhDs who do work with cancer. And we were invited to present a paper to show whether malignant tumors could be regressed with only medicine and without the use of surgery or chemotherapy. So we were, at that point, we had just started collecting data. And this is as far back as in 1995. And we produced a paper showing 16 cases of brain tumors regressed with Ruta and Calcarea Foss. You know, it was in a conventional conference, and there was a sharp divide in the audience as to how they received this information. The MDs, they were very, very skeptical. And they said, you know, it's impossible. A wart cannot go with medicines. That is what they believe. But the people who really came forward with a lot of zeal and interest were the PhDs. They came forward and they said, you know, they wanted to see all the original plate slides, and my father, who actually attended this conference, was carrying everything. So they went through it and they saw it, and they were very impressed. They said, you have shown that it works in the human body, but for any scientific institution to accept this is impossible without, you know, they'd like to go to the cell and
they want to
study the mechanism of action of this drug. So how is it working, and what does it do on cell lines, and then what does it do on animals, and then let's do some trials, and then let's see if it's safe. You know, see, they said that you have something, you have a motor car ready. Now what we need to do is we need to disassemble the whole thing to see what is making the engine tick. So we received this offer from the MD Anderson. Actually, we received offers from many institutions in many countries. But my father chose the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. Dr. Sen Pathak, he was the head of cellular biology and genetics, and he is still the emeritus professor there. Dr. Sen Pathak was very, very enthusiastic. He said, this medicine, in my 33 years as a geneticist, I have not seen any medicine. This is after the research. He said, I have not seen any medicine which can do this. He said, this medicine is actually selectively killing the brain tumor cells and rejuvenating the normal cells. So this is intelligent medicine. So this is how we got into the research aspect of it. After that, we did further research with other professors. We did with Dr. Imam from the University of Southern California. He was there then. Then we did with subsequently, you know, it has moved on from MD Anderson to University of Southern California to University of San Diego, where Dr. Barbara Sartre, I think she may be online here somewhere as well, where she and us, we collaborated on, and did some work on renal failures, etc.
And then there was a call from the US government at that time in 1996, when you were doing work with Dr. Sen Pathak. Then Dr. Wayne Jonas, he was the then director of the alternative medicine there. He called us that we'd like to have a consultation with you for some reason. So we went to Bethesda, and then he spoke to us for 4 hours and told that all these things we know you do, but your documentations are not good. If you do the documentations good, the NCI may accept your work. And he told that there is a best case series program which is there for where we write 10 cases of the any difficult disease, and for you, we ask you to give for cancer only because you know you treat cancer. Then we did the job, and we sent this Pratipa and I, we took 1 hour time, 1 year time from Dr. Jonas to have sent this thing. And then after that, we started doing that whole of 97. In the meantime, Dr. Jeff White came as a director of the Cancer Alternate Medicine in NCI, and he took over. And then we sent all 10 cases completely cured with only homeopathic medicines. And it was sent to Dr. Jeff White. And then after scrutinizing it for full 1 year, even comma foolstuffs were scrutinized. After that, he told that the congratulations that your works are all recognized, accepted by the National Cancer Institute of USA. And this is the first time that any unconventional treatment has been accepted by NCI. And after that, it's a history. Then NCI advised us to present the cases before the cancer advisory panel. Which is it was done in Bethesda again in the same year in 1999, and it was a 17-member committee. At that time, it was the highest committee of the United States, and NCI, unless NCI recommends, nobody could go there. We presented 10 cases of cancer there, same cases that has been accepted by the NCI. And our presentation was unanimously accepted by the whole committee, 17-member committee. And then the advisory panel advised the government, the U.S. government, to work with us in the cancer, and it's a very viable treatment. This way we have been carried out. A lot of other universities came, and so we are working. Thank you.
Fantastic. Okay, well, obviously I could ask a lot more questions. I do want to give other people an opportunity to ask some questions. Before I do that, let me just mention again that the Banerjees, Prasanta, and Pratip will be coming to North America. In October, the father-son duo will be speaking at the Canadian Homeopathic Conference in Toronto. You can get information, I believe, from our website. On that, and they'll also be presenting in Toronto at the Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and we'll also be presenting a full-day seminar in Buffalo, New York, on October 29th. If you go to our website or you click on any of the links that were sent to you about this conference, you should find a PDF file with all of the details listed. So let me go ahead and open it up and see if there are some other questions that some of the people on the call would like to ask.
From Arizona?
Yes, go ahead, from Arizona.
Can you use the protocols preventatively?
We have got some medicines we advise for preventive measures also. In many cases, as in pox, chicken pox, or say diphtheria, we give preventive medicines also.
Okay, so you do use them prophylactically.
Yes, yes. I'll tell you. We do use them prophylactically. And, you know, we are not very, we are actually quite against vaccination. I don't know, I think many, many of our brethren, they share this view, the homeopathic community. And what we do is that we have protocols for vaccinating children using homeopathic medicines. So that is one way that we use them prophylactically. On a more serious note, serious means, I'm not saying that is not serious, but on more in consonance with what we were talking about so far, we even use these medicines to prevent recurrence in cancers. So yes, that is also another prophylactic use that we have. And we actually published a paper on this brain tumor. We actually spoke about this, about prevention of recurrence in glioma patients at an Orlando meeting of the Society of Neuro-Oncology. This is, I think, about 2-3 years back. So, yes, we do use them as preventive.
Okay, very good. Other questions for Dr. Banerjee's?
Yeah. Dr. Day?
Dr. Day, go ahead.
Houston? Okay, I have a question for Pradeep.
Yes, Dr.
What
Day.
What is the definition? Yes.
I had.
Congratulations. It was a beautiful presentation.
Do that again.
Okay. Let me follow it up.
Thank you, Dr.
What is the definition of cure of cancer in homeopathy?
The cure of cancer in homeopathy. See, actually, the cure of cancer, according to what we believe in, we believe that the cure of cancer does not mean a 5-year deadline where the patient survives for 5 years and then dies at the first day after the 5 years and we say the patient has been cured. What we believe about curing cancer is that we give a medicine, the patient responds to the medicine, the tumor regresses, the patient reaches a disease-free state, we taper off the medicines, and the patient remains well without a recurrence. So this may need to be, the medicine may need to be continued for some, maybe a few months, and sometimes maybe for a few years. But at some point, the purpose of all treatment, the way we see it, the end point for all treatment, that the way we see it, is to stop the medicine. So ultimately, when we stop the medicine and the patient keeps well, then we will say the patient is cured. So we hold this as the truth even for cancer.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
No, I don't think so. In USA, from Cancer Society, the definition is if there is no cancer, within 5 years, it is cured. It is not accepted by you,
yeah.
I guess.
I know, but that is not the way we look at cure.
Okay. Okay, one other question to follow this week. What is the rate of cure of different types of cancer you mentioned? I know the best is tumor.
The best cancer that we treat is the brain tumors. And, you know, if we look at statistics, then, see, the overall aggregate for over 20,000 cases with all varieties of cancer treated over an 18-year period is that about 21% of the cancers completely regressed. and 23 were improved or stable. So we are looking at a fantastic figure of 44% where we have been able to help the patient. Now if you look at brain tumors, we have different statistics for different types, but the gliomas, see, here I'm talking about survival rates, the way that the normal cancer researcher would understand. Overall survival rates of gliomas were 74% for the first year, 53% for the second year, 43% for the third year, 39% for the fourth, and 32% for the fifth year. See, if you come consider that according to the CB Trust, the survival for the 5-year survival for gliomas is extremely poor. It's in single figures. The percentage in single figures. So this is, I'm talking about cases which, this is all actually retrospective data collection cases. And this is from those 20,000 plus cases that I was talking about that we have recorded already. Kim.
Great. I think we have time for one more question.
I'd like to ask a question about the conference in Toronto and Buffalo.
Ed, what's your question?
Okay.
Yes.
I want to say, first of all, thank you very much for the teleconference, Kim and Dr. Banerjee. But what I wanted to know was the conference in Toronto, as well as the Roswell Center and Buffalo, will you be speaking about the same thing, or would it be advantageous for me to go to all three?
Actually, we have prepared different types of presentations for all three of them, because the at the Canadian homeopathic seminar conference, we will not be talking only about cancer. Whereas at the Roswell Center, where the cancer is the main treatment area, then our presentation would be on cancer.
So you'll be speaking on Saturday at the Canadian Homeopathic Conference, and then on Sunday at the Roswell, right?
No, this is Arupi. Let me clarify.
He's the right guy. He can actually tell us everything.
Yeah, so they're talking at the Canadian conference on Saturday, but it's a very short period, so they won't have enough time to talk in great details. I think they'll have probably 3 to 4 hours at the maximum, because there are a lot of other speakers. This is the first time. There's a conference, annual conference, supported by all Canadian associations, so that's a unique phenomenon by itself. That starts on Friday, 21st of October, and goes up to Sunday, 23rd. And most likely, Dr. Banerjee would be speaking on Saturday for about 3 hours. That's not yet finalized, the time slot. They speak at Roswell Park Cancer Institute, which is one of the oldest comprehensive cancer center in this country, at the faculty forum for an hour, where they'll be focusing mostly on brain cancer and glioblastoma, GBA. And then in 29th, which is Saturday, 29th of October, they'll have a full-day seminar from 9 to 5, where they'll be focusing on all kind of cancer. And this will be more geared up to homeopaths and also to lay people, homeopath student, and also to doctors. So, yes, the best would be to, you know, do all of them if you can, or if you are interested in cancer, definitely come for the 29th October seminar. It's a full-day seminar. There'll be enough time to ask question, answers, and other details. I hope this helps.
Thank you very much, Arup. And I see that we're out of time. I want to just thank, first of all, Dr. Prasanta and Pratip Banerjee for joining us. They obviously have very busy schedules with all their research, and now we understand they're preparing some books on their Banerjee protocols and with their traveling and teaching. So thank you so much. If we could all give them a big North American thank you, I think it would be greatly appreciated. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, very good call, and thank you everybody for your participation and excellent questions. And remember, we do have another on Monday with Dr. Farouk Master on the clinical application of the theory of miasms as proposed by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann. So please join us for that call, and wishing everybody a good rest of your weekend.
Could we also say we were honored and very much would like to thank you and Arup and everybody else for being here and giving us the year?
Yes, thank you so much. It was our pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay, and thank you very much again. Have a good weekend.
And you too.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.